Hi, this is Cloud at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert SME Roundtable. I'm Sherry Bettine and I'll be your host. We are the IT Showcase team and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. I'm here with many of our cloud IT experts that have implemented cloud-based solutions at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. You can start posting your questions now in the live Skype Q&A window. Today, we would like to learn something about you, so we are posting a question for you. Where are you on your cloud journey? Are you just beginning and have most of your applications on-prem, or have you already made the big leap and have 100% of your portfolio in the cloud, or are you somewhere in between? We would love to learn how you are doing it, and so that will help frame up how we answer your questions. And while you're answering that question, we'll ask our SMEs to introduce themselves. Jim.
Hello, my name is Jim Adams. I'm a business program manager at Microsoft IT. I've been involved in the collaboration space, which includes Office and Office 365, since 2002.
I'm Ken Knight. I'm an enterprise architect working in IT. I've been working in it about 6 years and focused heavily on our move to the cloud since the very beginning.
I'm Rob Bedard. I'm a senior service engineer within IT. I work in our IT cloud adoption team known as Stratus, and very similar to what Ken does, it's been engaged very early on to get Microsoft IT to adopt the cloud.
And I am David Johnson. I'm in a team within Microsoft IT that is accountable to our collaboration offerings, everything from Skype, SharePoint, Exchange, Yammer, and so on. And my role has been to architect and design our solutions for SharePoint and on-prem and cloud, and how are we getting to the cloud more broadly.
Okay, great. We are going to make every effort in this next hour to answer all of your questions. However, if we don't, we'll stay behind in the studio and continue answering your questions and post that video with the original video on our IT Showcase website at microsoft.com/IT Showcase. We are waiting on your answers to the poll question, but we'll go ahead with the first question. What are the monitoring technologies Microsoft uses internally to monitor the cloud infrastructure?
Ken, do you want to take that one, or do you want me to kind of cue that up?
There's a couple of technologies, but I think Rob also has a bunch that we use as well. We're starting to use Microsoft Security Center to monitor the infrastructure. We're using OMS as well to monitor that stuff, and we're making a lot of the data service there. We have Application Insights, which is another one that we love to use to do that. And we even have some on-premise monitoring that we're still using when we bring the data back to on-premise for security purposes.
Yeah, security and performance, right? I mean, so there's a bunch of collectors that we use that we do some mashup on data on for performance. So we can look at what's going on to say whether we're actually utilizing assets in the cloud and getting out, being financially accountable. And I think your point being, OMS is kind of one of the key kind of underpinnings of that, I think. And we will continue to make investments in that space. I'm trying to think what else we've got. The big mashup piece, which is kind of like a tool called Sonar, which allows us to look at infrastructure utilization, basically on a couple of dimensions around CPU, memory, disk I/O, and network ingress, egress.
Yep.
Going to say, hey, are we using this or not?
And that works for both on-prem and
Yeah,
and
that's
cloud,
yeah, exactly. Nice. That's an on-prem and off-prem. I mean, really, it's just an extension. I mean, that kind of construct is really an extension of what we've done in the on-premise world.
Okay, thank you. How are you ensuring everyone has a plan for the cloud?
Well, what we've done with the program Stratus that Rob's been working on is we identified a whole bunch of behaviors and the need for cloud plans, which we put in Visual Studio. And when we started formalizing it, we needed somebody to be accountable to go get all of those plans for every single application in each of the organization's portfolios. And so as we added more and more duties about making sure we snooze all of the environments, be cost efficient in the cloud, as well as ensure that we're actively moving all the things off of on-prem to the cloud and disseminate that to all the organization's engineering teams, we came up with this notion of a cloud lead. And so each of the organizations has a person on point who's responsible for making sure that our move to the cloud happens along with those things that I was talking about.
Yeah, and I to kind of echo what you said there. So when we looked at, when we first started this journey, you know, we have a very large application portfolio ranging from the mundane type application to the extreme. So systems that how we realize revenue within ITs. You go from a very simple application to a very complex application. But there are some very fundamental characteristics we identified. So these cloud plans are basically a roll-up of every kind of entity within the application's infrastructure. And what we've done is we've kind of mapped those in Visual Studio Online to what we call our modern engineering promises, which are really user stories that would enable the acceleration of an application, or maybe at this point are, if this capability isn't available to us, we can't move that application. So that allows us to give us really good line of sight on when the application's going to move, and if we were to fix something within our infrastructure or light up a new monitoring technique or light up a different backup technique, we could move the needle on our adoption pretty significantly. And to your point, the cloud lead role is really instrumental in understanding the application portfolio within their business vertical and then saying, okay, what moves the needle here and how do I accelerate my adoption? And what that does, as I said, it gives us really great line of sight. And so we can put some real good time dates of when we know things are going to move. And we have some very aggressive targets around that.
Do you remember in the early days when we looked at what was blocking?
Yeah, that's the worst thing we ever did. And I think I was one of the ones that came up with the name of that. The blocker.
Yeah, there's a huge blocking list, but that list, I don't even remember seeing it anymore. All the blockers have been solved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so what we did was we looked at so if you look at the application infrastructure, you've got, it's Windows servers, right? Although, let's be quite frank, this process works for whatever, insert operating system name here. If it was Red Hat, if it was Ubuntu, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What we did is we looked at the, and I'm going to use the term container here, not in the construct of, say, Docker, but we looked at the Windows entity, the operating system entity, and we knew what characteristics that had from a technical standpoint, RAM, CPU, operating system, versions, network ingress and egress. What that allowed us to do is kind of build up a list and go, hey, this needs this capability, this very technical capability for us to move.
If lift and shift.
Lift and shift, yeah. The challenge being is, what I want to catch on is, we use the term blocker, and language dictates behavior.
Yeah.
That was a bad idea. We should never use the word blocker because people will go, I'm blocked. And that's a very negative
opportunity,
an accelerator.
List.
So yeah.
So that's what you'd call it now?
Yeah, I would call it anything but blocker.
Okay.
You can call it sandwich.
Semantics help.
Yeah, exactly. Great excuse.
I'd add to this, from a box product, the solutions that we're running on packaged products, like say SharePoint, for example, those are where we took the advantage and opportunity to say, how do we take this to our SaaS offerings? How do we move from SharePoint on-prem to SharePoint online? How do we move our SharePoint infrastructure and all our team sites to online? How do we move our mailboxes from Exchange on-prem to Exchange online? And so on the box product side of the equation, looking a little more by product area, so as opposed to looking at each individual application, more look at the product portfolio. What are all the SharePoint farms that we have on-prem and evaluating from that perspective?
Yeah, it's really a data-driven conversation you need to have with folks.
And we do have answers to our question now. We have 13% that are completely on-premises, 25% and 50% hybrid hits in the 26% range. We have 38% that are 75% hybrid.
Oh, that's good.
And then 25% that are 100% in the cloud. So we have a very mature cloud audience.
Yeah.
For 60%.
Yes, I'd love to know what the 100% completely in the cloud looks like. I'd love to know what that application portfolio looks like. That's exciting.
Where are we?
Yeah,
then how would we answer this question?
That's a great question. It's difficult to measure because hybrid kind of plays a little bit. And you've also had the dev test play in the product production. Right now, we're probably running in the excess of, from a pure VM perspective, in the excess of 11, 12,000 VMs that we're running right now.
So percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise of our portfolio, probably ran about 40% of our application portfolio in some fashion or another. But let's
so we hit with about 45% of that.
But if you factor in Office 365, mail, and a lot of our other infrastructure,
well, that's, yeah, I mean,
SharePoint,
as far as the content goes,
that would put us at 70%.
Well, we're vast, right? Yeah. On a SharePoint perspective, we're well over 95% in the cloud.
Yeah.
Right? From an Exchange perspective, the same thing. We're almost completely in the cloud for most of those Box products on 365.
Yep. And the reason we would maintain a Box product on premises because we sell a Box product.
That's correct.
Exactly.
And our mission is to provide feedback to the product.
We should put some numbers around what we're trying to do. So our CIO Jim Dubois, you know, we're comfortable with. You know, we say this to our customers all the time: is 93% of our application portfolio will run in the cloud. What that means is so let's put some data around what we're kind of tracking towards right now. By the end of this month, we should be dev test for the most part. We'll be running in Azure today.
100%.
Yeah, for the most part, give or take some outliers here and there.
Yeah.
The next goal on that, from a production standpoint, is we want to get to the kind of high 80s by the end of next June, so June 2017. 12
months from now.
12 months from now. That's a pretty aggressive target we need to get to. And let's be very clear, let's want to put some, you know, what that looks like. A lot of that will be infrastructure as a service because we're talking about legacy IT applications that are constructed in that fashion, a web tier, a middle tier, and a data tier, right? That's the traditional model. We expect over time, and from an investment standpoint, is our IaaS spend will go down as those applications die, as we no longer use them, but also our strategy, and you kind of touched on this, David, is our strategy is we will go from, if an application has investment in it, or it's a net new application, our goal is if SaaS exists, let's use SaaS.
It's our first choice.
It's our first choice. If not, we'll put investment into rewrite the application for PaaS. We do have it's your second choice, absolutely. We do have stuff that's going to stay on-premise in its current form, which we won't even move to.
It'll retire in place.
What we're going to do is we'll do some of the really big apps. We'll actually run on premise for the time being, but we're going to re-architect it purely for the cloud. So like a sales type application will go to the cloud first, but it won't go in an IaaS fashion because it's just, you know, in the concept, the way it is today, the way it's architected today.
So IaaS is our third choice. SaaS first, PaaS second, IaaS third.
Yeah.
I don't like the word choice in that case. That is your required destination, and then you go to figure out what we're going to do from an investment standpoint.
And realize if you do have to go to IaaS because you don't have the investment dollars to go to one or the other, it's not available. That's a stepping stone to the cloud.
Absolutely.
It's not our end goal. Our end goal is to get to everything to PaaS or SaaS.
And do we have any investments at all, projected or otherwise, for on-premises?
There's a residual acknowledgement that we need some on-premise.
Just to keep the lights on?
No,
for those...
actually, there's a few hardware things like badge software, monitoring, conference rooms. Okay. There's a few residual on-premise things that just need to be on-premise. Mm-hmm. And there's also a little bit of on-premise in IT because we want to be first and best customer and still test the package product on-premise.
Yeah. The other piece for on-prem, certainly in the package product world, like with SharePoint, for example, is regional. Our cloud tenancy is in the U.S., so... today, if I have to have content that must sit in Europe, for example, we will have that farm on-prem in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Africa would be a good example.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So it's minor, but it's noise, right, at that
it's
point?
Noise. Yeah. Okay.
How does Microsoft approach records management and compliance in SharePoint Online and Exchange Online?
So there's a bunch of factors for this. First of all, we have self-service SharePoint at Microsoft, so any employee can create a site whenever they need to. Record Center specifically is more for the business divisions that have more managed content, the contracts, the HR and finance data we must keep, for example. And those are times, or engineering collateral, and those are engagements where legal partners with those business teams to move that content into an actual dedicated record centers. We have record centers on Office 365 today for things like contracts or just past history of projects that must be retained for whatever legal reason is there. We still have record centers on-prem as well, but the vast majority, certainly today, of our new records are being maintained and managed on record centers on Office 365, but we don't have a, we don't do a hold in place model. So we actually say if a business needs to move that content into a record center, the business partners with legal to move that content in. Otherwise, the sites themselves have a retention policy around them, or at least some sort of expiration policy around them to say how long must the site live, or we will retire the site if no one's taking action on it.
You know, you did a great job with the on-premise infrastructure before the cloud in having self-service for SharePoint. I thought that was a beautiful role model for governance, self-governance, that and an example for others to follow. How did that get moved to the cloud? Do we still have that?
Yeah, so the interesting thing there is that was actually a notion of refactoring our application. We had a custom application which ran on-prem to manage and provide governance and lifecycle on our SharePoint sites. We then, when we, in 2012, 2011, whatever it was, when we started the process to refactor, we said, how do we rethink this governance infrastructure to work against 365, against the new cloud APIs? Because the model, of course, in particular for SharePoint, was different going to cloud. So we had to reimagine and refactor that solution. The nice thing about the governance infrastructure now is, as we think about new 365 modern groups that are coming, a lot of the capabilities are more and more in product directly. So things that we do today, like for example, you classify your site from a security perspective. That's a custom solution we have in place on-prem, a custom solution we built for cloud, but next generation groups has that baked in, for example, in product.
Awesome.
And the solution that you refactored for the cloud didn't rely on the smoke and mirrors, bubblegum and baling wire that we had to employ for the on-premises solution. Right. And it's quite elegant, and it's scalable, and it will evolve with the cloud offering.
Yep. And in fact, it's the model that we have, the pattern for that is actually an Office Patterns Practices. So you can go to dev.office.com and look into how do I enable self-service provisioning on my environment, how do I collect metadata for all projects for all the provisioning, as well as governance layers. How do I run jobs effectively against my service to administer, do things like lifecycle management, to do things like maybe I want to look for security exceptions. What are the things that you want to look for as an enterprise? Those are all jobs available in Patterns and Practices to help you do that.
And don't we have something on GitHub, or is that what you're
talking
about?
That's what I mean, Patterns and Practices. Okay. That's the dev.office.com has a GitHub behind it for all that.
Right. So we provide some getting started material for your enterprise to do the same thing.
Exactly.
Very good. Are there any tools available that will help identify what applications should be PaaS or SaaS? Where can we easily identify all the Microsoft PaaS and SaaS service offerings?
That's a great question. So there's a couple of ways to answer the first. There's a couple of things you can look at from the first perspective. There's a free download from the Azure team, which is an application identifier, and I'm trying to remember the name off the top of my head of what that is. And we can post that in the comments or something like that later, and I'll get that for you. There's also a service offering from Microsoft Consulting Services as well that takes what we've done internally and packaged it as a service offering. So the first one's like a free download, and the second one is a kind of Microsoft Consulting Service paid service that they can go consume. And the other aspect of that is, where can we easily identify Microsoft PaaS and SaaS service offerings? That's a good question, because I mean, you know, you log into the portal and it's a pretty overwhelming experience. Trying to think where I would go. There's a couple of Azure websites out there that will show all those service offerings. If we can do comments on this, hopefully we can post comments on this later, but we can do follow up and go, yeah, I can post something that kind of follows
most
up
of
on
the
that
tooling
one.
Is for IaaS analysis. So they have little crawlers in the tools that'll analyze your infrastructure, look at the sizing, tell you what the equivalent looks like in Azure from a unit perspective, and you can get a cost estimation. So we have a lot of these tools, but to actually understand what an application looks like, its architecture, and fit it to PaaS, you need an architect or an engineer, senior engineer,
to actually do
that analysis.
It wouldn't be apples to apples comparison, in fact, with all the...
It's a redesign. It's a refactor.
It's
rethinking.
Well, for PaaS. For SaaS, in some cases, it might be more of a lift and shift. Because, for example, you take SharePoint or a mailbox, those migrate, in many cases, pretty cleanly across, depending upon your customization level, right?
Yeah.
And so part of this is also, what are the 365 service offerings available to you? Dynamics, CRM, SharePoint, Exchange, and so on, that you can start taking advantage of by moving from Box product prem to cloud.
Yeah, I think I mean, when you look at the application itself, I mean, you can tear that to, you can start picking that to pieces, right? So your web tier, yep, that can be an easy uplift into the PaaS equivalent. Perhaps middle and data tiers are maybe a little bit more complex, but we do have, there's a couple of tools out there will go off and do that kind of analysis for you. As I said, there's an Azure accelerator that just basically, a lot of the questions, you know, it's not just the technical question, right? It's the business factor question. It's the risk, it's the compliance questions you need to be able to answer as well from an app perspective.
Yep. It was something that analyzes your stored procs to see if you run SQL Azure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. And is there something in that stored like proc that's going to go, no, but in the PaaS version. No,
but to look at like an on-premise middleware, messaging middleware architecture, figure out if it goes to Logic apps and Azure Functions, and thinking of how to redesign it and whether or not your connectors are available in some of the new serverless PaaS services that we have, there's no tooling for that at this point.
And the one thing that...
But also, you're making a point about all of the Azure services that, where you may have written custom code to do something, there may be a service now that does it for you.
Right. So that's a great point.
The coding that you actually have to do is much lighter weight.
When we started doing this with the three decisions about move all of your commoditized processes to SaaS, move all of the Microsoft-specific things that we're investing in to PaaS, and move the rest to IaaS, when we came up with that, there were only like 6 or 12 PaaS services at that time, not that many. Mm-hmm. Now there's well over 58 PaaS services and more coming. Mm-hmm. We've in the past 2 weeks, we've had 3 technical reviews at our PaaS working group just on new technologies come out of Azure.
Like, yeah. And you can also, in your PaaS solution, take advantage of SaaS services underneath the seams too. You may want to build a PaaS solution, for example, that stores data in 365.
Yeah. Mm. I think the thing is, when you think about, the one thing I caution, when you just go, I'm going to take my app, and if there's a magic thing I have here or a tool here that will make it go to PaaS, the one thing that I would caution is think about the advantages that the cloud brings to you. So on-demand compute, the elasticity of it, the microservices. So don't get stuck into the, I'm going to go to PaaS, and I've got my app to PaaS because it was IaaS, and I've done this kind of transformation. The transformation has to think about, let's think about what we're going to use. Is Document DB, is SQL Azure, is SQL Data Warehouse the right solution? Because what have been the right solution in the past for that data format, whether it's whatever it is, might not be right now. So really do think about that. There's going to be some easy wins, right? And I think when you think about adoption, you know, you have to be careful, right? You can go for easy wins. And like, oh, this app, look at this. But the app has to mean something. And that was one of the challenges early on. We'd have people going, well, I'm going to get a PaaS, or I'm going to move this app to the cloud. But the app doesn't really mean anything to anybody. So let's make it sure it's impactful. And there's almost a personal connection to it. When some of the apps we actually do have very personal connection to our employees, they can go, hey, this went to Azure, and it means something to you. The other aspect of that I think about is, you know, does it even need to exist anymore? The app, you know, let's retire it first.
Yeah. Retire,
or is there a service in SaaS that can totally replace that functionality?
Yeah.
Because when it was created, it probably was created for an on-premise solution.
Absolutely.
And when you're on-premise, you don't have that menu, that a la carte menu of services that you have available now in the cloud. Mm-hmm. So you had to build it. So now you can simply look at the menu that's available in the cloud and maybe replace it entirely.
I want to give an example of what you were talking about when you're looking at like different data storage technology. If you think of a catalog, traditionally our catalogs were in SQL Server, structured, transactional, that kind of stuff. But now you could use DocumentDB, a NoSQL alternative, and it has far more flexibility when you come up with new product types and new dimensional attributes. It's nothing to store a serialized JSON object in this technology, and it has full DR worldwide replication capabilities. I mean, it's natural for it, and so you should be looking at using the right tool for the right job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Could you explain your secure network design for your off-premise IaaS?
go for it. I have a simple slide on that that I love to talk to.
Let's talk about something. The investment we've made to get us going, right?
Yeah.
And please add some commentary on this, is Express Route, or Express Route, if we have people from England on the call. Of course, I'm going to throw that in. But that's, why do we, the first question, why? Well, the first reason is that these applications we have very traditional connectivity models that are expecting that network connectivity. The beauty of that is it is a direct link into Azure that you are holding yourself holding accountable to, right, from a security standpoint. So that's kind of like to kind of accelerate us. And we have an Express Route footprint into several Azure data centers from a Microsoft IT perspective. Once we're there, it's really the construct around, we're kind of protecting the edge at that point. So a lot of it's like, I tend like to use, you don't want to gate people's ability, but you also need to put some guardrails on it. So it's really about protecting the edge there. So we've put some software appliance components in there to build security around that. I think some of the Barracuda stuff we've used in that space. We do have some on-premises stuff. Any other?
So very simply, back when we started early and we had a commitment to move everything to the cloud, the easiest thing to do from getting out of a couple of data centers and avoid spending a couple $100 million on net new capacity was to lift and shift our on-premise capacity into the cloud. But that means not redesigning, rethinking, re-architecting, not even changing the topology that much, only where necessary. Mm-hmm. And so ExpressRoute allowed us to extend our corporate net into the cloud and move that capacity and decommission those data centers. That was deemed very, very important. As we moved there, we're not taking advantage of a whole bunch of PaaS or SaaS. We turned off the internet edge by policy for that move to the cloud. And so as Rob's bringing up, we might not advise a lot of customers to take the same route because now in the cloud, there's a lot more edge protection and ways to segment applications in the cloud today. And we are now looking at redesigning and re-architecting everything to take advantage of VNets and subnets and resource groups and moving everything to the new ARM model.
Yeah.
So we now have a rich environment to move that all to. If we had that back then, we would have done
it. We're opening up, so to your point, when we start, it's the edge is, the door, the edge is closed, right? No one's going past the edge.
Yeah.
Now that's the capability exists as we've kind of lit up those capabilities and learned in that space. So you can have what we consider partner facing services they can go consume that are just coming out through the edge as opposed to traversing back onto our own traditional corporate network.
Yep. And in a lot of cases, the traditional security model we had on-prem, which was loathed to move to the cloud, is now getting more comprehensive in the cloud to the point where actually we think cloud might be more secure than on-prem.
Yeah, I would agree.
Especially with big data, forensics, a lot of this infrastructure's there.
The capabilities that Azure lands as an IT organization, as an IT organization, which very similar to all the customers that are on this call, we don't have the resources that Azure has. They can deliver capability way quicker than we can, which is why we struggle almost. And it's like, why are we rebuilding the wheel on premises for our own tooling when in actual fact I can go consume Azure Security Center and get maybe better forensics out of it than I can? Certainly, we still do. We still do our own data collection, but there's a tremendous amount of capability that's still that we're just never going to be able to compete with, right?
No, they're coming in faster than we can absorb them now.
Yeah.
And that's how we get faster at delivery to our customers, is by leveraging what's already there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you got to be as out of the box as possible. No more important architectural principle than today to be that way. If you try to custom code things for whatever purpose, and the new functionality comes out that makes that
obsolete
in 3 months.
Yeah.
It used to be 3 years. Now it's 3 months.
Right.
It's like, just wait 3 months.
All right. How does Microsoft IT publish their SLAs on performance across services? For instance, SharePoint Online or horizontal applications like expenses. Is this something that is public to the general population or only internally reported to IT?
When we start with the cloud, 365 service SLAs are all highly published. So we have the same SLA with Office 365 as any of our customers do. So it basically, from our perspective, it's a pass-through. The SLA they provide is the SLA we provide internally.
Most of the SLAs are like 99.9 without HA and 99.95 for Azure. We have some customers and some internal implementations that have actual SLAs far in excess of that. So how do they achieve that? How do you achieve a very high SLA on an infrastructure that has a lower SLA? And the reason is you harden your system and design for failures. Mm-hmm. So it is possible to have a service, especially with things like VM scale sets for IaaS things, yeah. or for using Elastic PaaS services that will have higher SLAs than the underlying infrastructure for the service.
Can I be controversial in this answer
sure.
here? I'm SLAs. They're a thing. I struggle with the term availability. Because, and the way we're thinking about it within the organization I work in is, it's not necessarily the availability of a system. You know, oh, my service was up 99.99% of the time. I don't care. I
right.
honestly don't care anymore. It was the experience to the customer.
Right. Exactly.
That's the most important thing. So when we talk about IT as an entity now, and historically, let's be very clear, the expected metric was the 99.99 or whatever your availability was. Now that doesn't matter. It's what's the end-to-end service experience like?
The business SLA.
The user experience,
yeah.
whatever that might be, whether it's
yeah.
an internal-facing customer, whether it's an external-facing customer, what was that experience like? And what does it mean at a personal level when that service goes down? So when we have, so when we talk about the evolution of IT as an organization, we have teams that are allegiant to a particular service. That North Star is, you're allegiant to that service. So when you know when that service goes down, doesn't matter. Everyone's on the bridge, right, to answer that. Whether it's dev, whether it's operations, whomever might needs to be there, they are on that call. So there is some thoughts around, you know, SLA is kind of something we carry from the old world almost. And I think this isn't necessarily a cloud thing. This is an IT transformation thing
yeah.
that we're going through right now.
Yeah.
And potentially, you know, you might measure some KPIs internally, but, you know, SLA is, you know.
Well, we have a lot more visibility into metrics as well.
Yeah.
Before it was pretty binary. You hit your SLA or you didn't, and if you didn't, you had to tell why.
Yeah.
Now it's that user experience.
Yeah, the service.
It's how long did it take for this page to render?
Yeah.
It's up.
Yeah, we do
live.
That's great. Yeah, we do live side reviews. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the user experience,
yeah.
the customer experience.
Rob's right. We are moving to a service-oriented architecture. Or service-oriented business paradigm in IT.
Yeah.
And so we are now organizing everything we do by service offering, service line,
yeah.
and service.
And it's all, when, you know, when it goes down, it's not the, let's ask why until we get to the root. So what is the actual root of the failure? You know, oh, well, it, you know, it blue screened. Let's pretend the server blue screened or the VM blue screened. Well, why? And let's really put, we weren't monitoring for this event. Okay, that's what you need to get down to. And then we go back and peel
harden.
From
yeah.
really hard in the system. So things like, you know, failure mode effect analysis, right? And it's really incredibly important for those kind of, you know, for all services now.
Yeah.
And even our messaging to our user base has changed because of this.
Absolutely.
Before, the service managers would explain in great detail that server XYZ went down because of this particular service that went down and whatever. Users don't care. They just care about, oh, I can't get to my email. I can't get to my SharePoint site.
Yeah.
So now our messaging is, oops, we had a problem. We're on it right now, fixing it. We anticipate the solution in X number of minutes.
Yeah.
It hits home. It's direct, and the users care about it.
Yeah.
We even color code the bloody thing so that if it's red, you know you need
you
to look
yeah.
at it. Yeah.
Red, go patch this. You know.
Yep.
Green, misinformation.
And the secondary effect of this is really designing resilient and self-healing.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Services, so that once you know this is happening, how do we detect
mm-hmm.
and correct
yep.
before
mm-hmm.
it's even
yep.
exposed?
Using
to
that
customers.
Machine learning that
yep.
mm-hmm.
that is a part of the solution.
Yeah,
yep.
absolutely.
We have a couple of stellar examples of this. You know, yesterday I saw an analysis that speaks to what you're talking about. Where they looked at IT Web. I don't know if you've used IT Web recently. But we were trying to fix it for accessibility so
right.
that people with hearing problems or people with visual problems can use it better. And we had to redo the controls, and we were measuring how long it took these controls to load
right.
for the page to load and how easy they were to use. By fixing some of these controls that are on the page now loads in 4 seconds instead of 7 seconds. And I calculated
right.
that out, and it's a 21-minute savings if you hit that page once a day. That's 21 minutes of your life back.
In a year?
Or? Yeah, in a year. Yeah. I mean, but we're looking at this now. We're being meticulous about this now, which we weren't before.
Yeah, and it's a user experience, right? There you go.
Yeah. All right. What are some recommendations for approaching service orchestration using Azure?
Logic Apps is a new up-and-coming orchestrator for business at the PaaS level. That's what I would recommend looking into right now.
Yeah, I mean, in the IaaS space, I mean, which is where we're putting a lot of the investment. I mean, we have built some orchestration teams that are going off and doing that kind of work right now. I'm trying to think what we're using in that. I mean,
PowerShell scripts.
PowerShell, you know.
For operational
orchestration. Yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, like Chef, Puppet, those kind of things as well. I mean, you know, there's a variety of flavors out there to go do that.
Yeah.
So what does it mean, service orchestration?
One is infrastructure. So if you detect a failure, you want to respond to that. You can orchestrate an infrastructure response, spin up another unit, or scale up or scale down if you need to. You can start orchestrating these things. You can. It's part of the hardening for failures. DR recovery. You want to orchestrate for DR. So not only automated tests for DR, but should you actually have a disaster for some reason, an outage happens, then you can fail over, and you want to orchestrate for that.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's at the infrastructure, Azure compute layer.
Yeah.
And the business orchestration's up at the PaaS layer.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from in that. And the IaaS layer, I mean, we're doing a tremendous amount of work with, you know, ARM templates and things like that to kind of orchestrate deployment, right?
You
know,
yep.
They're very simplistic. If I can take, I'll give an example. This isn't actually an ARM example, but it's an example of where we've evolved. Is from an on-prem space, we used to have an SAP sandbox that would be 28 hours to deploy, 26 hours to deploy. Oh, and it's now, and just going to ASM, which is the kind of class, what they call classic Azure, versus the ARM, which is the model
Azure
people.
Azure
Resource Manager. Just in ASM, the classic model, it was 6 hours we got it down to. So the interesting thing is how much can we get that down in ARM, right?
Yeah.
Drive that down further. That would be really exciting to see, to be able to do that. Just at that layer alone, so, you know, just the JSON templates we're using there is pretty exciting.
Yeah. And our security team now is coming out with those as base class objects that our engineering teams use to have secure PaaS services out of the box.
Yeah, the consistent model of delivery.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have an internal Git that we use out of VSO to kind of publish all that kind of stuff in there, which we'll eventually publish publicly as well.
Yeah, so it's brilliant. I'm so psyched. And our security team has done a 180 from subjecting you to security analysis for the applications to being part of baking it into the engineering process.
You have to be a partner in that conversation, partner.
You have to, because now we're shipping every 2 weeks and we're moving towards continuous integration, continuous delivery.
And security is top of mind.
Has to be baked in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How large was your Office 365 on-premises offering, and how long did it take you to move it to the cloud? How much was moved versus how much stayed back?
Well, we started out at somewhere around 40 terabytes. And David, where are we now?
Is that SharePoint or O365?
SharePoint and pretty much just SharePoint.
Right.
And probably an equal amount in Exchange.
Right. Okay, so all of 80 about.
Yeah. But for the SharePoint site, how many site collections or how many terabytes do we have?
We're well over around 600 terabytes of content now between OneDrive for Business and SharePoint team sites and groups.
And that's indicative of the almost viral adoption of cloud services and SharePoint and all of the things that are a part of that suite of applications that we call Office 365. And that's pretty much what we used as the carrot to adoption. So we got people excited about moving to the cloud by offering up, lighting up all of these applications that were available at the time that were part of this Office 365 suite.
How long did we, this has been an ongoing process, right?
It's been an ongoing process, but as far as the SharePoint assets and the Exchange assets, it took us approximately 18 months to get all of it in place, all of the 95% that we moved. And it was slow going at first, then it began to accelerate as more tools, more partners got into providing tools for migrations and things like that. And as far as the portals go, the group portals, we started very, very slowly with the easiest portals to migrate, mm-hmm. and then we tackled the more difficult ones, and it just snowballed from there. And then the adoption, it went up.
A key point on this is what we call the Start Fresh program internally, where we didn't really start migrating it. We started migrating pieces here and there at first to do some experiments and get a few things in. But the broad scale migration didn't happen until we basically said, hey, we installed the defaults. So you want a new team site, you want a new group, you want a new project, you want a new space to do work. You do it in cloud. Mm. So everything net new was done in cloud.
Yeah.
And by simply opening up the doors and waiting a year, and off all the lifecycle management stuff we had on-prem, 50% of our on-prem environment was retired just through that patience of a year of, hey, a new project's in the cloud. The old team site, yeah, I don't need it anymore. I'll move what I need myself, actually. And that kind of behavior happened. Then we got into the model of saying, to Jim's point, now we're going to do the lift and shift and moving that stuff across, which of course takes more effort, but you at least know after that time, this is stuff that must go across. And then also to Jim's point on the portal, it's a matter of when the portal gets refactored, because part of the opportunity for cloud is to say, hey, these things, it's not just about moving to the cloud, it's about the new experiences possible. It's about making it work for mobile devices. And how do I want to refactor so I take advantage of the new form factors and having a great employee experience around all this. And so that refactoring takes time, and it was simply a matter of when the portal came up for renewal, that we weren't gonna start with every application, because clearly it's like rebuilding for PaaS, rebuild more broadly from an app perspective. When do you want to go do this work? When is it in from a portfolio perspective, it's time is right to do that.
Yep. And we didn't take everything.
No, we did not.
Retire.
We retired a lot of our assets that were on premises, and we let the site owners organically cull what they didn't want. So mm-hmm. they only moved what they actually were using, the living, breathing documents that were pertinent for the projects they were working on.
Right size. Yep. Right size. Yep. So retire, right size, refactor are common themes, both on moving our application infrastructure as well as our SharePoint office infrastructure.
Yeah, like and there cleaning may be, the garage in yeah. your house before yeah, you move.
Same Absolutely. Approach to moving
right.
your house.
You don't want to pay for the movement and the storage of junk yeah. that you don't yeah. care about.
That's anymore. Right. You don't move your trash.
And you don't have to move everything. You can settle for being a hybrid environment where you have a portion of your assets still on premises where it makes sense to do so. Mm-hmm. 100% is not the goal. It may be for a few enterprises and companies out there, but it doesn't have to be the goal. It can be 90%, 80%, whatever makes sense for your particular situation.
You get to determine, the risk associated. Yep. There might be some, we have in the safe trip, obviously we're talking about two different sides of the house here. We're talking about the O365 collaboration space, but you're also talking about the traditional IT application space. There's going to be stuff that is the long tail that stays on premise. There's going to be some stuff that's, I know we've got some hardware stuff out there that there's no equivalent, nor will there be equivalent in Azure for it, because it's legacy footprint hardware. That will die over time.
Or something that's about to retire, but not quite ready to retire.
Yeah.
Might not move.
Like some devices that will move to Internet of Things, but they aren't there right now.
Yeah.
So those hardware don't have a virtualization in the cloud.
Or we'll replatform it first, and right. we won't move it in its current state. We'll replatform it first.
Yeah.
Sales would be a good example of that one.
So one caution, though, on moving things that we observed. If you move, in some cases, if you move a chatty service to the database, and you move just the service tier into the cloud, you might have bad results. So there's a lot of cases where you want to move an ecosystem or at least the whole application to the cloud. And
absolutely.
We're seeing that with customers too, that they're moving ecosystems at once. So slightly bigger projects, and then carve off a good chunk of an ecosystem and move that. And that's getting a lot better results.
Your analysis starts at the lowest common denominator in the IS space, the VM, right?
Yeah.
But you build it from there. You look at the VM or the physical, then you look at the app and go, what's the impact of moving the app? But then you need to understand its downstream and upstream dependencies and go, okay, to your point, I'm moving my ecosystem here. So if I suddenly leave something on premises and I take it up into the cloud, you know, you are you could potentially inject some latency in there. So understand the impact. And there's a choice there, right? You either re-architect the app to say, hey, could you be a little less chatty here? Or we're going to move everything. So it's really making that data, but it's understanding the data behind the patterns and practices to be able to do that. And you know, we made some investment in tooling to go off and try to find that kind of those patterns and practices. Because it's amazing when you look at an application or even a service service probably the word is harder. Is you go, well, what connectivity does it have? And you get talk to the engineers and they go, it's this connectivity, this is the only I ever talked to. And then you look at it from a tooling perspective and you go, and there's a random thing over here that it's communicating to, which is actually critical that everyone had forgotten about. So you kind of have to have a good application map.
And that talks to the shift in engineering to architecture. Mm. You have to step back and take a look at the entire environment holistically. So that you actually architect your solutions properly instead of piecemealing engineering solutions in your particular application.
Well, in our case, to add to this, we took whole workloads. For example, we said, you know what, My Sites going away. We retired our worldwide My Sites and moved to OneDrive for Business across the board. Mm-hmm. But Team Sites, that's where we took some more time to go do it, and we still have some regional Team Sites on-prem, for example. So it depended on the thing. But our end goal is the vast majority of, certainly, for example, SharePoint and Exchange will be on cloud. We will retain presence on-prem for certain reasons, and not to mention at least the fact that we want a dog food and we have a hybrid environment to prove things out with. But that said, those environments are going to go to cloud, and mostly there now.
Okay.
There's from an architecture perspective, just one little point. There's as designed, as built, as operating.
Yeah.
And there are tools to discover how things are operating now.
Yeah.
So we have some tools that we use to do that. And it's amazing when you look at that and you say, wait a minute, I designed it this way and we built it this way, but we didn't expect it to operate that way.
Yeah, exactly. We had FactFinder. We made an investment in FactFinder, which Microsoft subsequently acquired, which is part of OMS now, I believe. And I think you can still... I think there's a service offering around FactFinder as well. So.
Very, very valuable insight.
Yeah, getting the insights into the app and see what it's doing.
Okay, next question. Will there be a formalized and widely available path to migrate from ASM to ARM in the future?
So that's really a product group question versus something we'd be able to answer. I don't know what was publicly announced on that one, so I'm probably not going to touch that question, unfortunately.
We're starting new with ARM and ARM environments and... First, it's a shift model.
Yeah, I would be surprised if there wasn't tooling available to do an ASM to ARM migration.
Hopefully,
hopefully.
But I don't know if it's there right now, so that's why we're.
I honestly don't know, and I'd be tentative to answer that question.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. When will Azure AD B2C be no longer in preview? Do we know that?
Another product group question.
We don't always know the answers to these questions.
In fact, to be honest, when the product group announced something, we're normally like, oh, okay.
That's interesting.
That's a thing.
we work in concert with the product group every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're IT, so we're half of that stuff.
Some of the line of sight NDA on that. We don't get some of the line of sight on some of that stuff.
It'll just let the PG answer the PG questions.
Yeah. And this, I will probably put the next question in that category. When will App Insight end of preview? We probably don't know.
No, we don't. Sorry.
Okay.
I can tell you. We use App Insight everywhere.
We have a major commitment to that, so we want to know that too.
Next question. Can you provide recommendations for approaching OLAP tabular data source migration to Azure? We are having issues with SharePoint site migrations with PowerView. Is this a David question?
With PowerView. So there's no direct... So the interesting thing is when you think about the BI stack, going from SharePoint BI on-prem to cloud, it's not a one-to-one mapping. Because in cloud, when you go to Power BI, you have your own independent set of experiences and reporting experiences versus the embedded SharePoint experiences. So I would separate the SharePoint parts of that conversation from the BI parts of that conversation. Mm. And honestly, I'm not the best person to talk to on the BI side to... refactor, what does it mean to take those all those reports, whether it's SSRS or whatever, to make them work against Power BI. But it's there is that separation that's happening from, there's, you know, I don't tie portal in with the SharePoint portal in with BI reporting anymore.
We've been using Azure Data Factory to do our BI moves to the cloud. as strategic, and then some people have still been using SSIS jobs to move the data into the environment, into the cloud. Both of them can work. I think Azure Data Factory is strategic in that we're making lots of investments in there. And SSIS is a little bit more functional right now.
Yeah, there's a time and a place. I mean, right now there's a time and a place for one of those, you know, based on the data type you're using, or the data flow you're trying to move.
Okay, one final question.
The one above.
What solution did you use for a service portal? Did you use a single portal like ServiceNow for on-prem and off-prem, or just use the Azure portal?
Can I take that one?
Yeah, go for
it. Okay, so we're IT, so when a tool is already available in the in the outside world, we're very good at writing our own tools to do exactly the same. When something works perfectly well, I mean,
we're changing.
We were joking about this beforehand, but there's no. This is my story. It's like, you know, given the wheel, IT would go, "That's great. Can I get a straight edge over here, or can we have it a different color, please?" So let's talk a bit about this. So we put an So we originally built what we called our enterprise cloud system portal in front of the Azure portal, because that was a great idea. So what we then did is, so for the on-prem world, we made an investment in WAP, the Windows Azure Pack. We're migrating out of that now to Azure Stack when that becomes available. We are depreciating our on-premises portal for compute acquisition and just giving people, they go create a subscription, they tie it to our Express Route.
Yep.
Once that's done, we give folks Azure portal access. We have a co-admin model, so our IT broker organization has co-admin on the subscription, and also our security team can put their own certificates in so they can get data line of sight on it. Yep. But after that, it's like, there's the portal. You can do a better job than we can for building a portal, so go ahead and use that.
And that speaks to the DevOps model.
Yeah, exactly the DevOps model. From the ServiceNow question, so we use, and this is knowledge, we use ServiceNow internally for our own CMDB, just for the scale that we have to use internally. We used to use an old product, a different product, and a custom built thing there, not a Microsoft solution.
Yep.
We've now got to put ServiceNow in there. But yeah, as I said, we've depreciated our own portal. I can understand where customers would want to do their own portal, though.
Yep.
I mean, so obviously, you know, we're Microsoft or Microsoft IT, we're going to use Azure wherever we possibly can. If I'm a customer outside and I'm, you know, God forbid they're not going to use, you know, they're going to use multiple cloud providers, then a single portal would be valuable. So I'm a user, I come in, here's my requirements, my business requirements. It's going to go deploy my compute requirements based on economics and capability into the best cloud possible for them at the time. Well, I would like that to be Azure when they do that, but that's kind of the reason we got out of that business.
And there are cloud management platforms that third parties
offer. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And we were actually looking at building that. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, very much so.
About 4 years ago, we dropped that.
Yeah, we didn't, you know, it's when there's a tool already available for us that gets us 80% is good enough, because the rest is just edge and special snowflakes that we can kind of, you know, no, this is the tool we're going to go use because it gets us to 80%. The 20% will come along at that point. You know, getting out of the point to your point earlier. Getting out of build when a service already exists. Why build a custom service to do exactly the same?
So are we there yet?
With that mentality? I would say that's a cultural change, right?
Yes.
And so you know, when we talk about cloud adoption, and there's different levers occurring simultaneously here, right? There is cloud adoption. There is the switch to a modern engineering mentality, mm-hmm. So agile, DevOps, and a combined engineering model where we take dev and test and put them together. So there's that lever occurring at the same time. To get all of this to work, and there's a Peter Drucker quote, right, you know, the cultural elite strategy for breakfast. I'm paraphrasing somewhat there. You can have all this strategy, but the culture is the other lever you have to change. So you're changing all of these simultaneously. They're all forcing factors on each other.
So your answer is no.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of. Yeah. Or it depends.
I think it's an ongoing journey. It's not
instant pudding.
No. That's right. That's not the way to say it. Yeah.
And I'm going to jump in here because we are getting near the end of our hour. And I do want to ask Arsenis one final question. And I want to start with you, David. What is the one tip that you would like to leave our customers with today?
I'd say I think there's the rethink opportunity for cloud is really critical. And I'd say, look, you, first of all, take a look at the simplest workloads you can move. We started with, you know, the easiest workloads because you dip your toes in the water and you see what you can do. But when it comes to the bigger, more complex things, that's where you want to reimagine. The portal space, for example, the internet, how do you reimagine your employee experiences so that you are building great holistic combined internet portals, maybe differ from what you had on-prem before? And that's a big part of this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a good question. Thinking about it as David talking there, I think I would look at it multi-dimensional here, is the approach you take, there's different ways to do this, right? There's multiple ways you can go down the road to cloud. You need to have executive support. Mm-hmm. If you don't have executive support, this is an uphill battle that will be incredibly difficult to do. So the message down from your leadership all the way down needs to be clear. There needs to be a clear line of sight for that. I would also suggest this, is as you move to the cloud, and you talked about experimentation in this, and also, you know, do proof of concept, things like that. Don't be, do that, but don't be afraid to fail as you go. So if you do go and you go, okay, this app didn't quite work, just fail and fail fast, and then take those learnings back in and share them widely, because there's an opportunity there for other people to learn. It's a great learning experience and a great learning opportunity. So don't go in with a very fixed mindset. Go in with this growth mindset experience, and I think you get tremendous, that's where the value comes from in my perspective.
So now that I see a lot of people have moved to the cloud, the next step in maturing is to optimize. And part of optimizing is moving up the stack. And so I would ask that you do what Rob just said about experimenting and looking at the PaaS services that are coming out. Look at Logic Apps, Azure Functions, enterprise integration capability that we have in Azure that's coming out right now. And look at moving some of your workloads up the stack. In general, the more you move up the stack, the more efficient you can operate that. And so some of our PaaS services are now serverless infrastructure, so you don't have to pay for idle capacity. You only pay for the capacity you use.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Okay. I'll talk to the 35% that are either at 0, 25, or 50% in the cloud. You don't have to experiment with production environments. Make duplicates and create yourself a kiddie pool. And play there, mm-hmm. Practice, do some mock migrations into the cloud. It's very easy to do. You can stand that environment up, bring it down, etc., and just rinse and repeat until you get it to where you're comfortable with migration prior to the real live thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Then it's a chip shot. So that's what I can recommend.
That's good.
Very good. Well, I want to thank our SMEs for being here to talk to our customers. It's truly valuable that we do this. And I want to thank our customers for joining us today. We really love the questions and the opportunity to come talk to you about how Microsoft does IT. This video will be posted on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase, along with past videos. We do have lots of wonderful live events coming in the future. You can look out there, and we hope you join us for more. We also have a wealth of other artifacts, technical case studies, articles, productivity guides for you to use in your journey to the cloud and what other technical projects that you have going. So with that, we're wrapped up. Thank you and have a great day.